This is the Annie Fry Show.
No enrichment of a uranium, and it would absolutely not. Iran is not absolutely not able to achieve a nuclear weapon. The president has been very clear about that. And by the way, the deal that Special Envoy Witkoff proposed to the Iranians was both realistic and acceptable within its terms. And that's why the president is sent that deal to them.
Carolyn Leavitt speaking on behalf of the White House, of course, and talking about the deal that could potentially be made, but what those non-negotiables are as well. We now hear that the president will probably make a decision in the next 2 weeks regarding his participation or lack of participation in a strike against Iran. And so we sit and wait. We could have something happen right away. It could take a week or two to determine, but we sit and we rely on the president's wisdom in this moment. Let's get to our guest, Senator Jim Talent, former senator from Missouri, former congressman as well, and also chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Senator, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Appreciate it, Annie. Always good to be with you.
Well, I appreciate that as well. I'd imagine you are probably glued to the day-by-day updates, minute-by-minute updates like the rest of us, and you've got quite a perspective on it. I heard today that the Senate is going to convene for a classified briefing, likely centered around this. You've been in the Senate. I'm wondering if you could give us, without necessarily details of what they'll obviously discuss, but why would the Senate be being brought together to hear this classified briefing?
You sure it's not just the Gang of Eight?
I think it was entire Senate, yeah.
Really? Okay. I don't know what kind of a skip they're going to get them in. Typically, what will happen is if you want to brief all the senators, and usually what they'll do is they'll make the, Ratliff, you know, the head of the CIA, available in a skiff. There's a skiff in the Capitol. In fact, there's several of them. A skiff is a sensitive compartmentalized information facility where you can go and get classified information. And then they'll have several sessions during the day, and you troop over there and get it. Now, sometimes if you have a war or peace vote coming up, everybody goes. Typically, not everybody will, but they're gonna give them all the intel that they've got. Which I think in this case is pretty clear that Iran has the capability to produce a nuclear weapon, or at least the amount of enriched uranium that they would need for it, and they were developing the ability to weaponize it. You have to have the enriched uranium. You have to be able to weaponize it into a warhead, and then you have to have the capacity to deliver the warhead. And they were just too close to all of that. The other stars lined up correctly, and so we have this campaign.
So we're speaking with Senator Jim Talent here on the Annie Fry Show. I want to get your thoughts on the back and forth, of course, between Israel and Iran. It doesn't seem as though either one has stopped firing missiles. The United States and their involvement so far has been, I guess, to provide some defense on Israel's behalf and munitions. What would it mean if the United States were to utilize those B-2 bombers and those bunker buster bombs that would be capable of taking out the Fordo nuclear site? What would that mean for our involvement in a war?
That's what the president's weighing now. What it would mean on the ground in terms of the operation is that the B-2s would fly about 30,000 feet in an uncompetitive environment. In other words, the air defenses have already been taken out, so it would be a milk run for them. And they will drop two massive ordnance penetration bombs, each of them weighing about 15,000 tons. And most of that weight is not explosive. It's the steel casing that itself penetrates. If you think about, you drop 15 tons from 30,000 feet, think of the force when it hits the ground. And so it penetrates, and then the explosive goes up. And basically, two of them can blow up a mountain, which will put paid to the Fordo nuclear facility, for all time. And I think the president shares with Netanyahu, and I think everybody who can see the obvious, that Iran cannot be permitted to get a nuclear weapon. It would be the worst single thing that could happen in the Middle East. And I think what the president is doing is he is waiting to see if the Israelis can do the job themselves at Fordo. He has time. There is nothing on the ground is going to change in the next 2 weeks. If they can do the job themselves, he's going to let them do it. That's, they're his idea of an ally. Mm-hmm. They don't just share a burden, they own the burden, right? And the advantage of that for the United States, I think, is primarily that if we do not become a formal co-belligerent, we will be in a better position to manage the post-conflict phase, which is what Trump really has his eye on. He has been trying since his first term to build a new equilibrium in the Middle East around an alignment of Israel and the conservative Sunni states, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, UAE, all the Gulf states, to include, if possible, Syria, which is why he made the outreach to Syria when he was on the Middle Eastern trip. This is Trump's vision. I think Netanyahu shares it. In any event, be fine with Netanyahu. It's exactly what Israel wants, is stability and equilibrium that is not dominated by a kinetic adversary of Israel. And so the two leaders have basically a common vision, and they're pursuing it. And Trump is letting Israel, you know, do the dirty work, which the Israelis are perfectly willing to do.
I hear the phrase regime change discussed quite a bit. And, you know, I think that the efforts that the United States have had in regime change before have turned into very long affairs that they did not want to necessarily be involved in. Do you feel as though mm-hmm. President Trump's approach here is unique or different in America's traditional approach in a moment like this? Is Donald Trump treating this differently?
You know, I think it depends on what tradition you're talking about. I think it's very Reagan-like. You know, I'm with the Reagan Institute now. Reagan and Trump in his first term shared, you know, a lot of things in terms of their approach. One of them was that neither one of them started a war, although that's not precisely true, because Reagan, you're too young to remember, Annie, but I remember Grenada. Remember that? When we, you know, if you've read about it, we sent a battalion of Marines to rescue Americans on an island that had been taken over by a Marxist government. But Reagan was very choosy. He used the American military in low-risk, high-reward situations, and Trump is the same. Well, this is a low-risk, high-reward situation, so Trump will use it, but he'd prefer not to. And no, we are not getting involved in some long commitment, and there's no reason for it. In fact, regime change isn't really even the goal here. I think the Israelis in particular would like to see it. But I think the minimum that we're likely to emerge from here is a beaten, isolated Islamic Republic that has to focus all its energies on trying to keep from being overthrown by their own people, which, you know, would be vastly preferable to what we've had for the last 20 years. So it'll either be that, or there'll be a faction in the government or in the army that decides it's time to get rid of Khomeini. If they get rid of him literally, the devil will have another companion, along with many of his other friends in the, you know, in the leadership of the Islamic Republic.
Senator Talent, this is Ryan Wiggins. In terms of Middle Eastern countries, who is with who? You know, could we go country by country and say, well, these are the ones that are kind of with the U.S. and Israel here, even if they're not openly saying that, that's what their actions would suggest. And these are the ones that are more with Iran, or is it just kind of a blend throughout?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ryan. I think that to get the best perspective on the Middle East, don't think of it in terms of national boundaries or maps. Many of those are just artificial anyway, created in the post-colonial era. Think of it in terms of religious or tribal groupings. So you have the radical Shia headed by Iran. You have the radical Sunnis, which are mostly now subnational terrorist groups that, you know, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, other spinoffs. You have the conservative Sunnis, who crucially in the last two decades have basically turned against the radicals of both flavors. So the Saudis are normally seen as the leaders there, but it includes most of the region, if you just want to count up countries. And then you have the others, everybody else, the Jewish state, the Kurds, the Druze. There's a bunch of people groupings, clans. Well, what if you want to say who's with whom, you have the Iranians have been the provocateur for the last couple of decades, leading the Shia. They do alliances of convenience with some Sunni radicals. Hamas is Sunni, for example. But their aim is to overthrow the conservative Sunni regimes and impose their version of Sharia on the whole region, and to dominate either formally or informally the Arab countries. You got to remember, Iran is mostly Persian, so there's a nationalistic flavor here too. So what Trump in particular, now what Obama and Biden tried, and I'm giving you too long an answer, but I'll speed
it's
it up.
We're soaking it up, Senator. Keep going.
So Obama and Biden, this is basically Obama, thought, okay, the way to get an equilibrium in the Middle East is to invite Iran into a regional arrangement, which was crazy because Iran doesn't want an equilibrium. Iran wants to dominate, and they think they have the right religiously to do it. And so that was never going to work. Trump's plan is to say we're going to isolate the radicals. We're going to go after the radical Sunni and blow them up. That's what he did with ISIS, right? With regard to Iran, which is a radical state, we're going to isolate it. We're going to contain it. We're going to punish it unless it changes, hence the sanctions and the rest of it. And we're going to build an alignment between the others and the conservative Sunnis, managed and supported by the United States. That is an equilibrium that can succeed. I'm absolutely convinced that he has that broader vision in mind, and he is in part managing our participation in what's going on now with that in view.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Senator Talent right now, Senator Jim Talent. Of course, a lot of expertise in understanding these foreign policy affairs. And we watch, and most of us civilians who don't have that inside view, we fear war. We fear, you know, people are using the nuclear word. It's very edge of your seat stuff. And we hope to not see any of this materialize. And we also worry about the United States getting involved in some sort of war. I'm watching the president react. And he just seems to have a calm about himself when he's asked these questions. He doesn't seem like he's anxious. He seems like he almost seems like he's a little forlorn that we are at this place. He talks about like Iran should have made a deal, like they had the opportunity to make a deal. And now he comes out and says he's going to get two more weeks before he makes a decision. That seems like a really long time in my brain. What kind of headspace do you feel the president is in?
I think the president knows exactly what he wants to achieve. He's obviously getting the best intel. He has advisors around him he feels comfortable with, though, of course, he's making the decisions. And I think he's pleased at these developments, as I am, and as I think Americans should be. Now, look, war always raises new questions, new issues, new risks. But it also answers some questions, and it can also eliminate risk if it's the right war done the right way. And this war is answering some questions, and it's eliminating some risk. Israel is emerging as the dominant power, the hegemon, if you will, of the Middle East regionally. And it has discovered the will to dominate its strategic environment, because after October 7th, Israel realized it can't count on being able to deter the enemies on its borders. It has to reduce the threat to the point where even if they're not deterred, they can't existentially attack. And so they've done it. They have this enormously sophisticated and powerful military intelligence apparatus. And, they've destroyed Hamas as an organized fighting force. They've defanged Hezbollah. They're eviscerating Iranian power now. And because they wounded Hezbollah so much, Hezbollah was not able to assist Bashar Assad, and he has now been replaced by a regime. And where we have a fair chance, that regime is run by a guy who 6 months ago was a radical Sunni. But between the Saudis and the United States, it is entirely possible we can move him into an acceptable direction. That's why Trump lifted the sanctions, but on the condition that they not attack the Kurds, they not militarize the south of the country next to Israel. There were several other conditions, and he's watching to see what they do. Now, I'll add one other thing. I really do. I have become convinced after watching him that Trump does have a deep personal distaste for the waste and illogic of war.
Yeah,
I think he's absolutely sincere when he talks about that. And it frustrates him on a personal level when these countries, whether it's Putin or Iran, engage in these aggressive tactics that are senseless from their own point of view, as Trump sees it. So I think he's very sincere, but he's a 79-year-old man now. He knows the world is a place with a lot of sadness in it, and he does what he has to do to advance the interests of his country.
Last question before we let you go. Senator Jim Talent speaking with us right now. We've heard and reports of some really like Mission Impossible level stuff that Israel has been able to conduct in order to make this mission as much of a success as it has been. I just wanted to know your thoughts on what Israel has been able to do and, you know, compare their capabilities with what the United States is capable of doing.
That's another great question or set of questions, really, because you have a couple of them in there. So I'm going to make a point I think I made before in the show, but I think it bears repeating because we're all adjusting to a new reality. Okay, when the Jews, the Jewish state said never again, they meant never again. Okay, They're not getting herded onto the railroad cars again.
Right.
And they're a very able, dedicated people who are united behind the idea of the state of Israel. They divide about a lot of things, but not that. And they have done a wonderful job of sizing and shaping their military and intelligence apparatus so that it can carry out the missions that it needs to carry out to protect the Jewish state, and that isn't changing. And they've gotten to the point now, they've lost the battle within the information space, largely. Most of the world doesn't like them, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's irritating to them, but at the end of the day, they can still dominate their strategic environment, provided they have the cooperation and support of the United States, which, since January 21st, they do. Now, in terms of their capability vis-a-vis ours, I think at the specialized missions they need to do, they're as good or better than we are. Because they've trained, they've sized, they've shaped for those kinds of missions. I do not believe that the CIA, our agency, could do what Mossad is doing. I mean, I kind of wish we could, but we have other reasons why we don't do that sort of thing. I mean, or we don't, you know, and therefore we don't do it well. In terms of the armed forces, if we wanted to, we could get as good at every mission as, you know, as there was certainly outstanding at precision strikes. We know how to fight urban warfare, too, as they're doing it. They're very good with drones. I don't know whether we're as good. We're trying to get as good as we can be, and I think we'll get there. So I don't mean to be denigrating the men and women of America's armed forces. They're the finest in the world, but the Israelis are designed for a somewhat different mission set. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's been wild to take in and see what the capabilities are and how Israel has been able to utilize them to their preservation. Senator Jim Talent, always an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks to you. And thank you, Ryan, also.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Did you hear the story about Israel or Mossad or whatever sent off some sort of fake communication that caused all the head leaders of Iran's military organization to come together so that they could make a decision?
Yes.
And so they managed to convene all of Iranian's top military brass due to a fake communication so that they would have to get together to discuss it. So then they're all together and then they got them.
It's. I mean, you think about that. You think about some of the things he's talking about with the specialized warfare that Israel engages in that we may not. The pagers story.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is years.
That takes so
in
long
play
to even begin to conceptualize, let alone pull off.
It's a long game.
It is a long game. And manipulating the messaging and the media is all part of that, not from Israel, but from world leaders. They're all doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we see, what they say, you know, it's funny because Trump, you always think of as being somebody who's just willing to just say whatever, but he's clearly disciplined in the way he's speaking, what he's saying publicly.
Well, I would imagine with Israel being such a strong ally that if we don't have the capabilities they have, that potentially we have access to them in great time of need. Quick break. When we come back, next question, ask us anything. What do you want to ask the Annie Fry Show? Ryan, Ethan, and myself will ask each other some questions as well when we return and have some Friday fun. All right. And X's and O's at 2 o'clock with some of my friends from the Lutheran Education Circuit. X's and O's at 2:05. Next question. Next segment. We'll be right back.
Next question on the Annie Fry Show.
All right, Ryan, you go first. Oh, with your microphone.
I got a couple of song questions for you.
Songs.
The first one is this.
Is this just to make me look stupid?
I mean, what question is it?
From me. Just thinking positive collateral damage.
Which is the better playoff song? Celebration from Cardinals 1982.
Playoff? Oh, so, okay, yeah.
Or Gloria Blues 2019.
Well, Celebration...
What year was Celebration?
That's not even...
1982 Cardinals World Series.
You can't compare those.
I'm asking you to.
Those are different... I mean, I didn't experience that as a sentient being.
But you've heard the songs.
Yeah.
So you know Celebration... You know Gloria.
I know The Heat Is On.
The Heat Is On is also a playoff song. You could add that one if you
walked
want to.
Into our wedding reception to The Heat Is On.
Well, rank the three.
What was The Heat Is On for?
1985?
Yeah, I know the song. I just didn't know what year it was for.
1985 Cardinals?
I don't know. I just know it's associated with the 80s Cardinals. But again, to the same point of Celebration, I was...
Or 87, maybe.
A wee little thing at that time. Gloria is great because there's a great story as to the genesis of it. And I can't. Jeanette says Celebration 100%. Stacy says Celebration. These people might have experienced it firsthand. The one song that I associate with Cardinals playoffs is Some Nights by Fun.
Oh, yeah.
From 2011. I don't know that that was a part of.
It wasn't like the rally score or anything.
No, it's more of an after thing where the Some Nights song was put to the montage of people watching Game 6 unfold. Have you ever seen that video?
Not with Some Nights.
Oh,
it's a cool video.
I mean, it's the best video on YouTube.
I've seen so many of those freaking montages of the 2011 season as a whole. I mean, that's what I used to do. Like, okay, let's watch 2011 Game 6 again.
Some Nights by Fun.
I haven't seen that one.
It's people who are filming themselves watch Game 6, and it's the best thing. I have goosebumps thinking about it. I'm going to default to say Gloria, only because that's probably the right answer for me, but I would always go towards baseball over hockey. And then, what is the song that we would always play at the Rams games where we're going to beat the hell out of you? Some people listening will know. My dad will know.
Well, is that something they added to the song?
No, it's
because they would always play Todd Rundgren's "I Just Want to Work."
It was something you did in the stadium. Ooh. I'll think of it. What about you? What do you think?
Well, I wasn't alive in 1982.
Yeah, it's kind of
or 85
question.
Or 87. Celebration is a. I mean, that is a classic as far as just. Like, I mean, you did it, you know, so that, I love it for that aspect of it. But I think that what you said, Annie, there's something about one celebrating with Gloria after every single playoff win. That was such a fun time, too. I had just graduated high school. So, you know, you're it was just a fun time. And just adding that onto it made it so much more. I remember doing this thing where every time that they would win a playoff game, Ryan, I would post on, you know, you post the Snapchat stories, right? And I'd post a video with that song playing, and whoever I was with, it'd be a ride home from baseball game, or it'd be watching the game at the arena. I'd say, here in St. Louis, we play Gloria when we win. And I did it, and it was cool seeing, like, the different montage put all together of all the different places. The way that that was created and everything that they went through in 2019 to get to that point, and it was just so random. So I would have to say Gloria personally, but I mean, Celebration, just based off the song, that's a fun one too.
The song that I was talking about at the Rams game is the Hey song.
Hey, oh, Gary Glitter.
Oh,
I
go, gotcha.
Part two.
We're gonna beat the hell out of you.
Yeah.
You. And we did for a while. And
I wasn't alive for much of that, unfortunately, either.
I wonder what Rock and Roll Part 1 is like, because that one's called Rock and Roll Part 2. Never heard Part 1.
But it's freaking awesome.
My answer to this question is probably Gloria, just because whenever I hear it, whether I'm...
That's all it means to me.
Whenever I hear it, it takes me back to that moment in time. Just the beginning of the song, I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. Yep.
I was too much on the outside looking in, adjacent, locking arms with my fellow St. Louisans, watching the Blues do what they were doing. Super happy for them. It made me interested in the playoffs. Like, I watched them the whole time. But it was weird to be that much on the outside of something, watching people love something so much and being like, okay, song.
So I was at game 4 of the Cup Finals, and I went with a friend that...
Did we win that game?
We did. It was the only game we won at home. So I was super fortunate to be at that one. So it was the only time that Gloria played at the Enterprise Center during the Cup Finals. And I remember my friend wanted to get out quick, get to the parking lot, because it was going to be crazy probably to leave.
And now you're not friends with him anymore?
No, we're still friends. It was a little bit of a bump. It was a bump in the road, right? But I was like, no, we have to stay and see Gloria. So we waited through Gloria. And then we left.
All right, next question. You got one from the audience, Ethan?
Yeah, you know, we can always rely on Bobo. He always has some great ones here in the comments. So as I scroll through and I decide which one I want to get from Bobo, let's go ahead and let's use this one. Would you rather honk like a goose every time someone says your name, or salute every time you see a squirrel?
Saluting seems like it would maybe be less public.
Where'd you come up with these?
I would think the salute is the clear answer to this question. If you say I would rather honk like a goose every time someone says your name, you're just looking for attention. And I hate that.
I thought you'd be a goose guy.
No.
But depending on who you are, like, you know, if you are someone that hates America, obviously this is an issue for any of us, I think. If you're someone that hates America, then this could be an issue, because maybe that is considered a sign of respect towards
America. Next question. I've got one. Are you subjected to, like, internet scams? I think I clicked on an email in one of my emails that was a phishing email, and I pride myself on being smarter than that, but I think I just did it in the last 48 hours.
Ooh.
And now I'm, like, concerned about what I expose myself to, so I'm digging deep on it. Have you ever done that?
I have famously done that with a fake Big Lots ad at Christmas. You ever heard that story?
Too good.
Is this the guy, the one where you let him on? No, that was a Facebook Marketplace story.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I know this story.
I will also do that. I haven't done it for a while on the phone, but I do it on the phone, too. If I get a spam call, I'll sometimes take it and just talk to him for a long time.
I get calls for Corey every day. Every day, someone wants to talk to Corey.
Have you ever played along?
No, I'm like, I'm not Corey.
Change your voicemail to be like, what's up? This is Corey. Leave me a message.
No.
And money.
I'm pretty sure that Corey owes somebody money. I am, in fact, not Corey. And I'm always like, I pick up the phone and I answer it. I don't know
kinda
if it's...
Kind of rhyme. And Corey.
No, it doesn't. And I'm like, I'm not Corey. I've never been Corey. I get calls for Corey all the time. Please take me off your list. And they usually hang up somewhere in the middle of that.
Maybe it's just the greatest setup for a prank of all time.
I love the spam
Super
calls
committed.
That when you're like, is this spam? I don't know. I pick it up and you answer and they hang up before you do. They clearly don't even want to be doing this.
Well, a lot of times those can be where when you say hello, they're mapping your voice to use your voice in the future.
If you ever got a call and it was you on the other end, mm-hmm. What would you do?
What?
Tell them I'm not Corey. I mean, that's the scam, is that they can call your loved ones and use your voice and be like, I need help, I need this, blah, blah, blah.
I think I'd be the most convinced if it was me saying, dude, you are about to be in some serious trouble.
Are you my conscience?
This is your future self. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. More questions from you on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat. You need to vote as well. Is President Trump humble? Yes or no? I'm going to ask the crew that question. When we come back, you'll hear our responses and a few more of your own. Just go to youtube.com/@AnnieFry and tell us if you think President Trump is humble. Vicky said, that would be a big old nope. And JB said, yes. Not all the time, though. 80-20, if you will. What do you think? Annie Fry YouTube, go vote, leave a comment. We'll be right back.
Okay, ask me anything question I want to ask before we run out of time in this segment is, I've had this one written down for like a month and I haven't asked it yet because it's kind of weird. Is there a song that gets stuck in your head all the time? Like one, is there one
Whose
song?
Whose side are you on?
Does it?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Really?
And you know who always puts it in my head?
Me.
Ethan.
Oh.
No.
I have been singing
you know,
that a lot lately.
Just minding our business, walking through our day, and he's over there just going, and I'm like, God dang it, stop it.
Oh, okay.
It's because last week I showed it to part-time producer Drew once because Ryan's remix of it.
Yeah.
Was so freaking funny.
If you
funny.
Want to put my audio on this computer on, we can probably...
Oh, there
we
go. Against
we'll fight Everybody says stop listening. We'll fight from dawn Bring it home, lady. Right
oh, which side are you on?
Oh.
Which side are you
I'm
on?
I'm not on this side.
Tell me which side are you on?
Okay, I regret bringing it up.
That's your fault.
It is, kind of. It's your little beers.
I went to go and show Drew that once last week, and well, ever
think?
Since... Oh, he thought it was amazing.
Oh.
I couldn't get it out of my head.
Yeah, now it's in y'all's head, if you've still...
That's singing. The song that always gets stuck in your head, that
Lately?
One?
That will get stuck, that I will be like... actively thinking about later on in the day.
Yeah, I think what I'm asking is there a song that gets stuck in your head that it's not because you heard it? It's like it comes up in your brain without prompting. And that one's one? I could see it. I could see it. That would happen.
You know what's pretty normal for me? It's not the same song ever for me. What it tends to be for me, because I picked the music for both this show and the Mark Rudin show, it'll be one of the songs that I pick... from this for Annie's show gets stuck in my head for a few hours, and then one of them from Mark's usually for the rest of the day. That's usually how music getting stuck in
one?
My head works.
Yeah, I got one that gets stuck in my head, and I rarely ever hear it, but I sing it all the time for like 10 years.
What is it?
Are we listening? Why? Why this song?
I don't know, but I just watched Barbie again yesterday with my daughters. Turn it off.
I am.
And towards the end, when the Kens take over and it's like the patriarchy is in charge and the song they all play is Push.
That is so funny.
I wanna push you around.
I wish
that
song.
I laugh out loud every time.
Because that song has meaning to it and it sounds kind of abusive, even though it's not intended to be.
Yeah.
So it's clearly like the patriarchy thing. I wish that song had no other meaning, that they just were playing a Matchbox 20 song and they all loved it that much.
Yeah.
That makes me laugh when I see that scene. But this song, I will sing it at any hour of the day for years. And I'm like, why Collective Soul, The World I Know? God, why that one?
I would have even known the name of that song. Next question, Ethan, you got another one from the audience?
I don't have one from the chat, but I have one of my own. Is
Perfect,
that okay?
I like that.
So, you don't have to share the age, but I'm curious if you guys have a favorite birthday like that like really sticks out as like, this was my favorite one I've ever had, and what did you do on that day?
So like to celebrate the birthday?
Yes.
Not just like the favorite age to be.
Correct.
Do you have one that sticks out?
I have a birthday that sticks out, but it's for the opposite reason.
That works.
A bad one?
Yeah. I went to... So I was working at a station called UPN. at the time, UPN 46. It's no longer a station. It's not even a network anymore.
Up in.
And I went on my first ever solo commercial shoot on my birthday. It was probably my 25th birthday or something like that. I don't know exactly. But I didn't do it right. And so I shot this whole commercial. There was no footage. I get back to the office and find out there's no footage.
This is like a recurring dream nightmare.
It's terrible. And it was like my first big test. You know, oh, you've been on a couple with other people, but this one's yours. There was no footage there. So I have to then call my boss, tell him, hey, I just wasted an entire day, not only of mine, but of the client's. And I have to call the client and schedule a reshoot for everything we just did. And happy birthday. It was my birthday. We're going out to eat tonight. It was terrible.
That's brutal. Jeez.
Do you have a favorite birthday, Ethan?
I do. Mine probably was last year. So in 2023 and 2024, I was the Cardinals booth assistant. And last year's happened to be while they were at home. So I got to spend my birthday at the ballpark. And besides that, you know, it was just a normal ball game. What was the best part about it is that a couple of times last year when broadcaster Mike Claiborne was out, I would get to fill in for him and do the player of the game interviews on the field. And I got to do it that day because he was gone. So it's just, and it was, I did a few of them last year. Like I said, that was probably my best one. It was my last one. And my mom also was at the ballpark, so she got to be there and see that. So yeah, that was pretty cool. That was a lot of fun.
So I don't want to be, I'm afraid that I was like, I'm forgetting something here, and it would upset people, but we don't really do a lot of big things for my birthday. I can remember being really happy with like simple things on my birthday.
Like a cup of porridge?
No. My 30th birthday, we got some friends together and went and karaoke'd and stuff. My birthday falls on Good Friday quite a lot, so that was a Good Friday birthday. But it was just being around the right people. But I don't know. I can't think of nothing really
nothing
like...
Nothing sticks out.
Nothing sticks out. But, I can be content with some pretty simple things. All right, I'm going to ask you guys the YouTube live chat poll, which y'all can go vote at youtube.com/@AnnieFry, F-R-E-Y. Is President Trump humble, yes or no? Last question in our next question segment.
Okay.
You first, Ryan.
I think that there are going to be some really good answers saying yes to this question, and I may even agree with them. But a politician who bathes in a golden bathtub...
How do you know?
...and... refers to himself in the third person. And I'll pull up Andy's comment here online. I gotta agree. Do humble people put their name on everything? Not really. So if you want to judge the heart of the man, I may say, great, I hope you're right, but I'm going to answer no to this question.
You think the fact that his business has his name on it precludes him from being able to be humble?
No. I just think that people who tend to be humble don't go out there and be like, look, it's a Trump Bible. Like, it's just not the kind of characteristic that usually lands with humility.
And do you think, I mean, obviously he had to sign off on it and permit it. Do you think he's the one who came up with the Trump Bible?
Oh, I think he definitely is all in on the phones and the Bibles and the shoes and the anything you can put Trump's label on.
But him being all in on it is not that's different than being, like the phone, the new Trump mobile that just came out, he's not associated with that at all. It's Eric Trump. It's the Trump organization.
Oh, it's the brand, not
and
him.
His name. I mean, the brand's got to be called something.
Mm-hmm. I mean, then take that one aside. I just think that...
I do think Trump Mobile is different than the Trump watches and the Bibles and that type of stuff.
This is a guy who... And, you know, honestly, the answer to this question is evolving. I think in his first term, I was definitely a no. Now, I got to, you know, really think about it.
Ethan?
I don't know if humble would be the word I would first go to describe him. So I'm going to vote no on this as well. But I do think that we have seen a much kinder and to a certain extent, for lack of better words, gentle Donald Trump in this second term. Just in the way that you see those behind the scenes interactions with people. Not that those didn't exist in the first. You see, there was definitely some things out there, but this is definitely a different Trump that we're seeing in this second term. I don't know if I would say humble's the best word to describe it, but kind for sure.
I also think it's important. I'm glad you said kind. I think you can be kind and you can be generous and you could not espouse great humility. I think that all of those things can be present. I do think he is a humble person. I just think that he's also other things at the same time, which is maybe conflicting, but I'm going to vote yes on this poll. I'm going to tell you this. It's super close. Go vote. X's and O's next.